following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
And now we have 4 kids Sci-Fi Thursday for you on top of the cereals we have. Hope you enjoy.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight, The Discovery of Morneal Mathaway by William Tent.
Everyone is astonished at the change in Morneal Mathaway since he was discovered. Everyone, that is, but me. They remember him as an unbathed and untalented Greenwich Village painter who began almost every second sentence with I, and ended every third one with me. You see, I understand the change in him, because I was there the day he was discovered. We were talking about his discovery that day. I was sitting carefully balanced on the one wooden chair in his cold little Bleecker Street studio, because I was too sophisticated to sit in the easy chair.
Come on, Dave, take a comfortable seat.
Oh, no, Morty, oh, no, I know about that chair.
Now, what do you mean? It's the only comfortable chair in the room.
Yeah, I know, look at it. Broken down spring, very high in the front and low in the back.
Sure, it conforms with the position of the spine.
Yeah, sure. And when you sit in it, things begin sliding out of your pockets. Loose change, keys, wallets, anything. What do you do, Moyle? Pay the rent on your studio with that easy chair?
Well, as a matter of fact, it is rather profitable.
Mm. And that's why I'll sit on the wooden chair, if you don't mind.
Oh, now, don't be bourgeois.
Well, I notice you always sit on the bed.
That's because I'm a good host.
I see. Well, how's the painting going?
Oh, great, great, fabulous.
You sell any paintings?
No. You know, Dave, I can't wait for the day when some dealer, some critic with an ounce of brain sees my work. I can't miss, Dave. I know I can't miss. I'm just too good. Sometimes I get frightened at how good I am. Why, it's almost too much talent for one man.
Well, there's always...
Not that it's too much talent for me. I'm big enough to carry it, fortunately. I'm large enough of soul.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. Now, if you don't mind...
You know what I was thinking about this morning?
No, but to tell you the truth,
I was thinking about Picasso, Dave. Picasso and Rouen. I'd just gone for a walk through the pushcart area to have my breakfast.
You know, the old hand's quicker than the eye. I know. I've seen you do it. You're the only man I know who can ask directions to Houston Street and fill his pockets full of bananas at the same time.
Oh, well, society owes the artist something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I started to think about the art of modern painting. I think about that a lot, Dave. It troubles me.
You do, huh? Well, I think...
I was thinking, who is really doing important work in painting today? Who is really an unquestionable great? I could think of only three names. Picasso, Rouault, and me.
Well, naturally.
Just three names, no more. Oh, it made me feel very lonely, Dave.
Yes, well, I can see that. But
then I asked myself, why is this so? Has absolute genius always been so rare? Why has my impending discovery been delayed so long? Oh, I've thought about it for a long time, Dave. I've thought about it humbly, carefully, because it's an important question, and this is the answer I came up with.
Well, don't bother waiting for the answer that Morneal came up with. It turned out to be a theory of aesthetics I'd heard at least a dozen times before from a dozen other painters in the village. Morneal was a bad painter, there was no question about it. I say that not only for my opinion. I've roomed with two modern painters, and I've been married for a year to another, but... Well, for example, a friend of mine, a fine critic of modern art, took a look at one of Morneal's paintings, which he hung over my fireplace in spite of my protests, and just kind of stared slack-jawed.
What does he call that technique?
Well, he says it's smudge on smudge.
Well, I can believe it.
Smudge on smudge, white on white. Non-objectivism, neo-abstractionism, call it what you like. There's nothing there, nothing. Well, it doesn't even have the interest of those paintings that chimpanzee did a couple of years ago. He's just another of those loud-mouthed, frowsy, frustrated dilettantes that infest the village. Why do you waste your time with him?
Well, for one thing, he lives right around the corner, and he's kind of colorful in his own sick way. And he does have one great talent.
It's not in painting.
No, no. Now, you see, I just get by as far as living expenses are concerned. Things like good paper to write on, good books for my library, I can't touch them. And sometimes the yearning gets too great. You know, a newly published collection by Wallace Stevens. Well, if I find one I want, I just go over to Morneal's and tell him about it.
He doesn't lend you money.
Oh, no, no. Now, you see, we go out to the bookstore and we come in separately. And then I start a conversation with the proprietor about some very expensive out-of-print item I'm thinking of ordering, and Morneal just says, "Don't mind me, I'm browsing." Well, that's the high sign. I'm browsing.
Well, what happens?
Well, while I'm keeping the proprietor talking, Morneal snaffles the Stevens.
Isn't that just a little bit,
Oh, well, I intend to pay for them, of course, as soon as I'm a little ahead.
Well, why does he do this for you?
Oh, well, I pay off. I go through the same routine at an art supply store so Morneal can get canvas and paint and brushes. Of course, I really have to pay for Morneal's browsing. I have to suffer through listening to him, and then my conscience bothers me.
Oh, it does.
Yes, you see, I intend to pay for my things, but I know he doesn't. And that's why my conscience bothers me. Well, here he was the day he was discovered, sitting in his room, and Morneal was running on about his own genius.
Now, I can't be as unique as I feel. Other people must be born with the potential of such great talent, but it's destroyed in them before they can reach artistic maturity. Why? How? Well, let's examine the role that society plays in all of this.
What's that? You got a hi-fi set?
Nonsense. That's a crass materialistic concept
Something is happening. Hey, why did you put the purple lights in?
Purple? Oh, what's that?
Look, it's shimmering. It's coming right through the wall. It looks like a box.
We can't both be having an artistic vision. You're not the type.
No, I'm not, and I'm not drunk either. Look out, something's going to happen.
Morneal Mathaway?
Who are you? Where'd you come from?
You are Morneal Mathaway?
Yes.
My name is Glescu. I bring you greetings from 2487 A.D.
Oh, 2487 A.D.?
I realize this is a difficult phenomenon for you to grasp entirely, but here I am. We will now indulge in the 20th century custom of shaking hands. Mr. Morneal Mathaway?
Oh, well, sure. Shake, yes.
And you, sir?
Yeah, sure. I don't mind. Shake.
What a moment. What a supreme moment.
Oh, what do you mean, what a moment? What's so special about it? Are you the inventor of time travel?
Me, an inventor? No. Time travel was invented by Antoinette Ingeborg, and, well, that was after your time. It's hardly worth going into at the moment, especially since I only have half an hour.
Why half an hour?
The skin drum can only be maintained that long. The skin drum is, well, call it the transmitting device that enables me to appear in your period. There is such an enormous expenditure of power required that a trip into the past is made only every 50 years. The privilege is awarded as a sort of go-bell. I believe I have the word right. It is go-bell, isn't it? The award made in your time?
Well, you wouldn't mean Nobel by any chance, a Nobel Prize?
That's it, the Nobel Prize. A trip is awarded to outstanding scholars as a kind of Nobel Prize. Once every 50 years, the man selected by the Gardamax is the most preeminent, that sort of thing, you know. Up to now, of course, it's always gone to historians, or they frittered it away on the Siege of Troy, and the first atom bomb explosion at Los Alamos, or the discovery of America, things like that. But this year...
Yes? Well, what kind of scholar are you?
I am an art scholar. My specialty is art history, and my special field in art history is...
What? What? What?
You, Mr. Mathaway. In my own period, I may say without much contradiction, I am the greatest living authority on the life and works of Morneal Mathaway. My special field is you.
Dave, did you hear that? Dave!
I heard.
Do you mean that I'm famous? That famous?
Famous. You, my dear sir, are beyond fame. You are one of the immortals the human race has produced.
That famous?
That famous. Who is the man with whom modern painting in its full glory is said to have definitely begun? Who is the man whose designs and color have dominated architecture for the past 5 centuries? Who is responsible for the arrangement of our cities, the shape of our artifacts, the texture of our clothing?
Me.
You. No other man in the history of art has exerted such a massive influence over design. To whom can I compare you, sir? To what other artist in history can I possibly compare you?
Rembrandt? Da Vinci?
Rembrandt and Da Vinci in the same breath as you. That's ridiculous. They lacked your universality, your taste for the cosmic.
Wow.
Mr. Glesko, excuse me. Do you happen to know of a poet named David Danziger? Did much of his work survive?
Is that you?
Yes, that's me. Dave Danziger?
Well, no. I don't think so. The only poet I can remember for this time and this part of the world is Peter Tebb.
Tebb? Never heard of him.
Then this must have been before he was discovered. But you see, I am an art scholar. Well, see, checking my chronometer, I see my time is getting short. But it is an overwhelming delight for me to be standing in your studio, Mr. Mathaway, and looking at you at last in the flesh. I wonder if you would mind obliging me with a small favor.
Oh, sure. You name it. Nothing's too good for you. What do you want?
I wonder, I'm sure you don't mind, could you possibly let me look at your painting? The one that you're working on at this very moment.
Well, sure. I have one right over here. Just, I'll pull the easel around. There you are. I intend to call this Figured Figurines number 29.
Hmm? Oh, but this...
What's the matter?
Well, surely this isn't your work, Mr. Mathaway?
Yeah. It's my work, all right. Figured Figurines number 29. Recognize it?
No, I do not recognize it, and that is a fact for which I am extremely grateful. Could I see something else, please? Something a little later.
Well, that's the latest. Everything else is earlier. Here, you might like this. Now, I call this Figured Figurines number 22. I think it's the best of my early period.
Oh, dear. You know, well, this looks like a smears of paint on top of other smears of paint.
Right. Only I call it smudge on smudge. But you probably know all about that, being such an authority on me. And now, here we have Figured Figurines number 12.
Do you mind leaving these figurines, Mr. Mathaway? I'd like to see something of yours with color and form.
Well, I haven't done any real color work for a long time. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. I have one over here somewhere, an old canvas. I was going to paint over it. Here we are. This is one of the few examples of my mauve and mottle period that I've kept.
Oh, right. I can't imagine why. Oh, dear.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Let me show you some of my intestinal period. Here. Here's a particularly good one. It's called Large Intestine Rampant. You like it?
Oh, please. I think I'd like to sit down.
Well, take the comfortable chair. And here's another one called Small Intestine Incisive. Oh, it's rather good, don't you think? I managed to avoid completely any definite line. You notice that?
I don't suppose you have a drink of Glafax. Oh, no, of course you don't. It hasn't been invented yet.
Now here's one that's bound to be great. It's one of my earlier smudge on smudges. It's called Fly Ash. Mm. I painted it by coating the canvas with slow-setting glue and leaving it out on the window for about 2.5 hours. Notice the delicate deposit of soot.
Oh, please. Please, Miss Mathaway, please.
Oh, I've got lots more.
I don't understand this. All these canvases, this is obviously before you discover yourself and your true technique. But I'm looking for a sign. a hint to the genius that is to come, and I find...
Well, how about this one? Here.
Oh, please. Oh, take that away. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, no. Look, I'll have to leave soon. I don't understand this at all. Let me show you something here, gentlemen. Here, a pocket edition of the source book.
The complete paintings of Morneau Mathaway, 1928-1996. Were you born in 1928?
Yep. May 23rd, 1928.
Here, look at the first painting.
Well, that's beautiful. I mean, the color, that's incredible.
Oh, well, that stuff. Well, why didn't you tell me you wanted that kind of stuff?
You mean you have paintings like this, too?
No, not paintings. One painting. Oh, I did it last week as a sort of an experiment, but I wasn't satisfied with the way it turned out, so I gave it to the girl downstairs. Would you like to look at it?
Oh, yes. Very much.
Well, here, I'll just toss you a book on the bed. Come on, it won't take a minute or two. Oh, she isn't home. I thought she'd be home now. Oh, I did so want you to see that painting.
I want to see it. I want to see anything that looks like your mature work. But time is getting short. The chronometer...
I'll tell you what. Anita here has a couple of cats that she asked me to feed when she's away for a while. So she's given me the key to her apartment. Suppose I, browse upstairs and get it.
But she...
Suppose I browse through my room and get it. Get it?
Oh, yeah. You go ahead and browse, sure.
Fine, but please hurry.
Oh, sure, I'll hurry. I won't take long browsing.
Well, that was it, the high sign. I'd seen Morneau Mathaway in action too many times as a shoplifter not to understand it. He was going upstairs to lift that book that he'd dropped on the bed. I knew he hadn't ever painted a picture like the one in the book, but he would now. Only he wouldn't paint them. He copied them. Well, I started talking automatically. You paint yourself, Mr. Glasgow?
No. Of course, I wanted to be an artist when I was a boy. I imagine every critic starts out that way, but I found it far easier to write about paintings than to do them. Once I began reading The Life of Morneau Mathaway, I knew I had found my field. Not only do I empathize closely with his paintings, but he seems so much like a person I could have known and liked. That's one of the things that puzzles me. He's quite different from what I had imagined.
Yes, I'll bet he is.
Of course, history has a way of adding romance to an important figure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear, I'm running out of time here. Do you think you'll be back with the key soon? I've practically no time left. I've just got to get upstairs to the time translator. I just can't wait. I'll have to hurry now. Oh, dear, no, I did want to see an original Mathaway. I did want to. Mr. Mathaway, I... Oh!
What's the matter?
The time translator, it isn't here. It's gone.
The book is gone, too.
And Mathaway, he stranded me here. He must have figured out that getting inside and closing the door made it return.
Yeah, he's a great figure. And he'll probably figure out a very plausible story to tell the people in your time to explain how the whole thing happened. Why should he work his head off in the 20th century when he can be an outstanding hero-worship celebrity in the 25th?
So what'll happen if they ask him to paint merely one picture?
Oh, he'll probably tell them he's already done his work and feels he can no longer add anything of importance to it. He'll no doubt end up giving lectures on himself. Don't worry. He'll make out. It's you I'm worried about. You're stuck here, aren't you? Are they likely to send a rescue party after you?
No. Every scholar who wins the award has to sign a waiver of responsibility in case he doesn't return.
Mm.
No, I'm stuck here. Tell me, is it very bad living in this period?
Well, not so bad. Of course, you'll need a social security card. I don't know how you go about getting one at your age, and... Well, the immigration authorities may want to question you since you're sort of an illegal alien.
Oh, dear, that's awful.
Wait a minute. It needn't be. I'll tell you what. Morneau has a social security card. He had a job a couple of years ago. He keeps his birth certificate in that drawer along with his other papers. Now, why don't you just assume his identity? He'll never show you up as an imposter.
So do you think I could? Won't I be... won't his friends, his relatives...
No, he hasn't got any family, and I'm about the only friend he's got. You could get away with it. Maybe grow a beard and dye it blonde. Naturally, the big problem would be earning a living. Being a specialist on Mathaway and the art movements derived from him wouldn't get you set an awful lot right now.
But I could paint. I've always dreamed of being an artist. I don't have much talent, but there are all kinds of artistic novelties I know about, all kinds of graphic innovations that don't exist in your time. Surely that would be enough, even without talent, to make a living for me on some third or fourth-rate level?
Yes, certainly was. But not on a third or fourth-rate level. Mr. Glescu, that is Morneo Mathaway, is the finest painter alive today and the unhappiest. After his last wildly successful exhibition, I remember he said to me,
"What's the matter with all these people praising me like that? I don't have an ounce of real talent in me. All my work is completely derivative. I've tried to do something, anything that was completely my own. But I'm so steeped in Mathaway that I can't seem to make my own personality come through. And those idiotic critics go on raving about me. And the work isn't even my own."
"Well, then whose is it?"
"Mathaway's, of course. We thought there couldn't be a time paradox. I wish you could read all the scientific papers on the subject. They fill whole libraries because it isn't possible, the time specialists argue, for a painting to be copied from a future reproduction and so have no original artist. But that's what I'm doing. I'm copying from that book by memory."
Look, Glescu, that is Mathaway, don't knock yourself out.
"But it's dishonest."
"No, it isn't. You're deliberately trying not to copy those paintings. You're working so hard at it that you refuse to think about that book or even discuss it. As a matter of fact, when I tried to get you to talk about it a little while ago, you couldn't actually remember it."
"That's true. That's true."
"You're the real Morneo Mathaway, and there's no paradox. You're actually painting those pictures. You're not copying them from memory."
"I know in my heart that they're not mine."
"All right, I'll forget it. Anyway, you're a much nicer guy than Mathaway ever was. And besides, a buck is a buck."
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Lulu by Clifford D. Simak, a story which demonstrates that a spaceship should be a darb, a smasher, a pip, a beaut, but man all battle stations if it ever becomes a sweetheart of a ship. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X-1 has brought you The Discovery of Morneo Mathaway, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by William Ten and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in our cast were Leon Janney as Mathaway, Guy Repp as the critic, Wendell Holmes as Glescu, and Les Damon as Dave. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Good evening, dear listeners. I am Barnabas Collins. I hope you will forgive the intrusion, and I hope that you have been enjoying Broken Sea Audio Productions' OTR Swagcast. Please allow me to introduce the next haunting episode of Dark Shadows.
My name is Victoria Winters. A warm night wind wails around the walls of Collingwood, and for all the world sounds like a cry of anguish and despair. Imprisoned in the depths of a house on the great estate, there is one who knows despair, and yet still clings to a single, frail hope. A hope that she will somehow be freed from the prison in which she is held captive. Freed from the one who would destroy her.
I got flowers. Does that love first cut flowers? They were placed in her room every morning. Why did she ask me to get them? Does it mean you're going to let the girl come back up here? Perhaps. You mean you're going to give another chance? You ask entirely too many questions, Willie. She can't stay down in that room much longer, Barnabas. She's about to go crazy down there.
She deserves a far greater punishment than that.
I offered her the world, a chance to become my bride, my Josette, through eternity. And she refused.
I think she's ready to accept it.
It will be unfortunate for her if she resists me again.
What will you do to her?
You know the answer to that. Of course, I will have to kill her.
Hi, Sam.
Oh, God. Have you, you checked with the sheriff today?
No.
Don't you think you should?
Oh, it depresses me to hear the same old answer. If he has any news, he'll pass it on to me. He knows where he can find me.
Well, I think I'll stop by his office anyway just to find out what's happening. Why don't you come on with me?
No, I can't. I gotta take a run up to Collinwood.
Collinwood?
After the old house. I finished the painting of Barnabas Conrad. I had Barnabas Collins last night, and I wanted to pass it on to him and collect my commission.
Oh, I'm glad to hear you're working. It's a good idea.
Well, either that or I go crazy.
Look, Sam, we can't give up hope no matter what.
Oh, I haven't given up hope. As long as I live, I believe that Maggie's alive. Somewhere.
After being in here alone.
He wants me to take you upstairs.
Upstairs?
To your room. I mean, Josette's room. I would put me in, he's going to give you another chance.
Do you think so?
You go along with it. You pretend to be what he wants you to be for your own sake.
I'll try.
Now, you got to do more than try. You got to make him think you are Josette and you're going to be his bride.
Willie! Do you know what that means, to be like he is? Just exist among the living dead.
I don't say that.
It's true.
You know you want to live. You know you want to get out of here.
I just want to get out of this room. He'd go insane if I have to stay in here any longer.
And don't resist him. Make him think he's won.
Believe me.
You make him believe you. This could be your last chance. Your very last chance.
How are you, my dear?
Better. Better than I've been in days.
Are you happy to return to your room?
It's like a paradise.
Perhaps you will appreciate it a little more than you did.
I do. Yes, I do.
Would you like to stay here again?
May I?
Please proceed.
Oh, Barnabas, please. Please don't make me go back to that room. Let me stay here. I'll do anything. Just please say you will.
Please don't plead with me. Josette was above begging for anything.
I'm sorry.
And you must be Josette in every detail.
I want to be.
Well, you must be certain that you're sincere.
I am. Believe me, I am.
Perhaps. I had Willie cut some fresh flowers for you. Do you like them?
Oh, most beautiful flowers I've ever seen.
Josette had a vase of flowers in every room in the house. She wanted life. The beauty of living to surround her wherever she went.
I'd long to see a flower, a tree, even a blade of grass.
It would be so easy for you to be free. All you must do is accept your destiny.
I want to accept it.
Wanting is not enough. You must accept it willingly.
I'm trying to do that.
I see you have your music box.
Yes. I wanted it with me.
Have you played it?
Yes.
How did you feel when you listened to it?
Sometimes I really believed I was Josette. I really did.
Play it now. It would please me. Listen. Allow the music to become a part of you. You seem calmer when you listen to the music.
Yes.
Does it really have that effect on you?
I feel...
How do you feel?
Why, I feel happy.
Why?
I don't know why. I'm not sure.
Is it because you're here in this room?
Yes.
Is it because you're with me?
Yes.
Have you longed to be with me?
Yes, with all my heart.
Look at me. Look into my eyes. Deep into my eyes. Tell me how happy you are.
Happy.
Because we're together?
Yes.
And how long will we remain together?
Through eternity. I shall be your bride. I want to be your bride.
Josette?
Yes.
Josette, I have waited for you for so long. I want you to be happy. I promise you shall. I will make you happy to the end of time. You recoiled.
No.
You did. When I kissed your hand, why, Josette?
I didn't mean to.
For a moment you were Josette, my Josette. But the part of you clings to that stupid belief that Maggie Evans still exists. When will you learn that that common creature no longer exists? When will you accept yourself as the lovely creature you could be?
Maggie Evans. Yes, that is who I am. You can kill me, but nothing will ever change that.
I ought to kill you. You're not worthy of the honor that I've tried to give you.
Willie,
really, I told you not to come in here.
He's here, a father. His car just pulled up out back. He'll be at the door any minute.
Really?
We better get back downstairs.
No, I think not. I prefer to leave her here.
But it isn't safe. She might make a sound. He might hear her.
You must make sure that she doesn't. You know what will happen if you fail.
But Barnabas...
Don't argue with me. No. Here, take this handkerchief. I'll put it around her mouth. Now, I want you to go down to the end of the hall at the top of the stairs.
The end of the hall?
Evans. I'll let him in. Now do as I say. Take her to the end of the hall.
If I take her there, she'll only be a few feet away from her father.
Exactly. I want her to overhear our conversation.
But it isn't safe. She might move. She might make a sound.
I don't think she will. Because I may be forced to kill her. And of course, forced to kill her father, too. Why, Mr. Evans, what a pleasant surprise.
Well, Mr. Collins, I came to deliver the portrait.
Is it finished?
Yes, I finished it last night.
Really? Well, I'd assume you'd stop talking.
No, I used it as a kind of therapy.
Well, I'm most anxious to see it, won't you come in?
Well, I hope you like it.
I'm sure I will. Splendid. Good. It's everything I hoped for.
Well, it's not the best work I've done, but it's the best work I can do right now.
I couldn't be happier.
Oh, glad to hear that.
Oh, Mr. Evans, forgive me.
For what?
For not asking you at the beginning. Have you had any news of your daughter?
No, none.
I'm extremely sorry. I'm sure the authorities are still searching for her.
Well, they've pretty much given up the search.
So soon?
Well, it's several weeks now, and they've looked every place she might be. They're certain she's not in the area.
Do you think she might have been taken out of the area?
Well, it's a possibility. The state police have sent out a description of her. They have circulated pictures of her all over the country.
Well, I'm sure that she's alive and well.
No, I'd like to believe that. It's getting harder and harder as the days go by.
Well, I'm sure there's nothing to worry about.
Well, I hope so. I've been clinging to the hope that someday, somehow, they'll find her.
Sam? Joe?
What are you doing here?
Well, I knew you were here, and I have to talk to you. Look, I'm sorry to come busting in like this, Mr. Helen, but it's important.
Quite all right.
Would you excuse us for a second?
Of course. Well, what is it, Joe? What's going on? Is it Maggie? Is it...
Sam, I've just come from the sheriff's office.
They've located her.
Well, they think they have.
Well, where is she?
You better brace yourself, Sam.
Oh, is she?
They found the unidentified body of a girl on a beach 50 miles north of here, and they think it's Maggie.
No.
It was pretty hard for them to make the identification. The girl's the same size and age as Maggie, but otherwise the body's pretty unrecognizable. Been in the water 4 or 5 days.
Oh, then there's a possibility it's not Maggie.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a possibility, but the police feel pretty sure that it is Maggie.
No, it can't be. Oh, what's the use of kidding myself? Of course it's Maggie. It has to be Maggie. Gone.
I couldn't help overhearing, Mr. Evans. Allow me to extend my sincere condolence.
Thanks.
Let's get out of here, Joe. They said?
Yes.
Do you still hope that they will come searching for you? Do you still hope that they will find you?
I don't know.
Why would they look for you now? They think you're dead. As far as the world is concerned, Maggie Evans is dead.
No.
Soon they will forget all about you. Oh, they will grieve for a while. Especially your father, young Haskell. But soon they will forget the fact that you existed at all.
Don't say that.
Young Haskell will find another girl in time. Marry and all his feelings for you will be transferred to someone else.
Don't.
Your father will drown his sorrows and drink for a while and then turn to his work, his painting. And you will be nothing but a memory, even to him.
Please. Please don't say those things.
Why not? Isn't it true? As far as the world's concerned, Maggie Evans is gone. She doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is where it is she exists in your mind. It would be better for you that if she ceased to exist at all.
I'll never stop being Maggie Evans.
Oh, it would be a shame if you died when you could continue to exist so happily as Josette Collins.
I'll never be Josette Collins.
We shall see about that. I suggest you think about it. Willie, take her back downstairs.
You can't put me back in that room!
It's the only place for you to think. One thinks best in the atmosphere of solitude.
Please! Please, you can't put me back in that room! I'll go mad if I stay in that room!
Take her out of here, Willie.
Oh.
The sight of her offends me.
Please!
Don't argue with him. It's no use.
Thank you.
go.
I have to.
Please, just stay for a little while. I can't stand to be alone.
I can't stay. Barnabas needs me.
He's fine. Don't go. Just for a little while. Willie, don't go. Don't.
Blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight, Field Study by Peter Phillips.
You might put down that newspaper for just a minute, Frank.
Hmm? Oh, of course, dear.
See, this is good coffee, honey.
Now, what is it going to be? That's what I want to know. Overtime or that big night out you promised me?
Well, I just can't say for sure, honey. I'll phone you during the day.
Look, you've been working on that Mitchell embezzlement for 3 months, day and night. Now that it's over, I think you'd want to celebrate.
Well, I do, dear, I do. But I don't know just what this new assignment will involve.
Oh, this is it. This is absolutely the end. You can change your job or change your wife, Frank.
Oh, no,
honey. I thought I married a man, not an accounting machine.
I guess I do seem like an accounting machine to Betty sometimes. Maybe she should have married a different kind of guy. Someone who likes to go out dancing and to parties all the time. And who has some kind of romantic career. The quiet life she had with me made her tense and nervous. No, more than that, neurotic. Actually, the work I did was rather interesting, although she didn't feel that way about it. Being an investigator for the accountancy branch isn't exactly like being one of those detectives as smart as Einstein and as tough as Marciano, but we do get into some unusual situations. And now there was this new assignment the chief had given me.
All I want you to do is see him, Frankie. You can be normally curious, but that's all. If you question him, make it simple. And if he gets cagey, cut it out. You're not going as an agent. You're just an errand boy. Take what he hands out and bring it back. Get on it right away.
Although I got there early, the waiting room was filled with about 40 people. 40 people who seemed to have everything from Parkinson's disease to muscular atrophy. In 40 years, I'd never had anything wrong with me but a post-nasal drip, but I was prepared with the symptoms of an obscure ailment. I didn't have an appointment, but I had hardly sat down when a receptionist came over and ushered me into the office.
I'll be with you in just a moment. Please sit down.
Well, thank you. This is good of you, Doctor, but I was perfectly willing to wait my turn.
Well, I'm entitled to use my own discretion. You're an interesting case. And please don't call me Doctor. In the healing profession, that title is reserved for those who have taken the Hippocratic Oath. My name is Trancor.
You said I'm an interesting case. How do you know about my case? You've never seen me before.
My receptionist has intuitive diagnostic ability. Now, what are your symptoms?
It seems you should be able to tell me.
Well, let's say the recital is part of the treatment. But if you'd rather not bother, just take this capsule in water.
But this is ridiculous. How do I know?
You don't. I make no claims. You can take the capsule or leave it. How many tokens, how much money do you have with you?
Now, listen, Doctor.
No, I'm not a doctor. How much?
Oh, about $50, I suppose.
Well, give me 25 for the capsule, which you take on faith, if you take it. Well?
All right, I'll take it. I'm afraid that's all there is to report, Chief.
It's all right. All we really wanted was the capsule.
Have you gotten a report?
Yes, and it took the laboratory 5 hours to break it down. Just a harmless protean solution. Two other investigators got the same thing.
What about the genuine patients?
They get a solution of water and a vegetable dye. They're both useless, but when he spots an investigator, he tries to give our lab men a headache.
If he prescribes useless medicines, can't Trancor be booked for fraud?
Oh, he doesn't make any claims for the blaster thing.
How come he's on our level? Why the accountancy branch?
Could be anybody's case. Every time a direct law enforcement agency has tried to investigate, the man has disappeared. They think we may be more discreet.
What else do we know?
A great deal. And then again, nothing. We have reports from law agencies and medical societies in London, Paris, Berlin, and Prague. Oh, that reminds me. Miss Hance, please ask Sir Greville to come in now. He sets up in business. Word of his cures gets around. He becomes a sensation and then disappears. Thank you for waiting, Sir Greville. This is Frank Paik, who will be in charge of our investigation.
How do you do?
Frank, this is Sir Greville Gray, chairman of the English Medical Association.
How do you do, sir?
Suppose you tell Paik your own experience with Trancor, Sir Greville.
Well, after conferring with my colleagues in other countries, I managed to have an interview with him when he set up shop in London. He's an impudent little devil. Called me the chief witch doctor. When I said we'd prosecute, he flatly denied that he practiced medicine at all.
What about the capsules?
He said he simply offered the capsules because people expected something material. He said it made no difference whether they took them or not. In a word, he disclaims everything, even success.
Perhaps legally he's in the clear.
You mentioned his success. Do you credit him with success?
I think he's a faker and a fraud. But some reputable doctors report that their own patients seem to have been cured of advanced leukemia, peritonitis, and appendicitis. That's why we must investigate these fantastic rumors as a professional and public duty.
Just what do you want me to do, Chief?
Find out all you can. Have them watch, check with patients, and stay with it. You may disappear at any time.
This is a fine time for an assignment like this. My wife is about ready to get a psychiatrist or another husband.
I'm sorry, Frankie, but you're the only one I can trust on a thing like this, and it shouldn't take long.
Okay, Chief. You have a cigarette? Mine seem to be all gone.
No wonder. I smoked half a dozen while we've been talking.
Yeah. Thanks. I guess I do smoke too much. Probably what causes this post-nasal drip. Say, that's funny.
What?
My head is cleared up. My nasal drip is gone. Since I saw Trancor this morning.
Huh? Oh, it probably cleared up by itself.
But I've had it for years. Well, I hope you're right. Now, look, sweetheart, I know I practically promised, but I can't make it tonight.
I've been hearing that over and over.
But, darling, this is a special case. It's detective work. The police are helping me.
Oh, so you think you're a real G-man now, huh? A big, tough hero running around with a bottle of rye and a blonde.
Oh, sweetie.
Listen, hero, I hope they shoot first. I'm through.
It's nothing like that, honey. Now, you're just upset and unreasonable. Look, I'll try to be home early. I'll call
don't
you.
Don't bother. I won't be here. I heard from an old school friend today, and since you're going to be busy, I may as well go out.
Oh, but baby, listen.
I'll see you around town. And if you do get home early, don't wait up.
I was alone in the office all evening, thinking about Betty, thinking about Trancor. I remembered Betty's crack about a bottle of rye, so I called the liquor store and had them send up a pint. Every now and then I got a call from a detective saying they were still watching the office. Then there was a call from another detective saying that he had picked up Trancor at the entrance of the office building and trailed him to a hotel just off Broadway. I took down the number and was about to leave when the first detective called again. He said they were still waiting at the office door and that there was still no sign of Trancor. I didn't try to explain. I didn't want to think about it. What could I say? That he flew out the window? I took another drink of rye and went to the hotel. As I got there, a figure came out of the building. I wasn't sure, but I followed him.
Good evening, Mr. Pake. How are your nasal passages?
Fine, thank you. I mean, yes, they're better.
Walk with me, won't you? But first signal your policeman that he needn't follow us.
All right. All right, now tell me something, will you? Am I mad?
No, you're more sane than most. Your higher critical centers are momentarily dulled by fatigue and alcohol, giving full rein to your intuition. An endearing quality when allied with imagination. The saving grace, indeed, of your race.
You're from India, aren't you?
Trancor is a good Indian name. Incidentally, fatigue is a disease.
But don't cure me. I don't want to wake up. Let me close my eyes a minute. Are you still here?
Did you expect me to disappear? I could quite easily, by convincing you of my non-presence, as I did when I walked past those men outside my office. Don't you want to ask me some questions?
Maybe I do, but why do you want to answer them? Well, you figure I'm harmless, huh? Like my wife does.
By no means. I went about to conclude my own particular investigation. I'd say that you were most dangerous to me. Your imagination is quite highly developed.
You know, all of a sudden, I'm not drunk at all anymore. And I need a drink. Come on, let's go in here.
Very well.
A double rye, please.
The same. Oh, just leave the bottle. Ah, that's better. I was thirsty.
You drank half the bottle.
I make sure to eliminate the poisons in the alcohol, thus the toxic effects. As a rule, I don't drink, but when in Rome...
Wait a minute. I remember reading a story once. You're from the future.
Your imagination deserves something better than comic strips to work on. It's fascinating, but depressing to see science negated by superstition. Your concept of time is the greatest superstition.
Well, now let's go back. You did cure my post-nasal drip, didn't you?
The infection was cured by your body. I helped. I can't tell you how unless you have 500 years to spare.
Well, I don't. I haven't got 12 hours to spare, if I'm to save my job, my reputation, or my wife. I do need some answers to a pretty lengthy questionnaire. Who, when, what, why, and where?
You're convinced I'm a telepath?
Well, aren't you?
Not in your sense of the term. When you came into my waiting room, I knew you were not there as a patient. Your presence was in disharmony. As for your name and occupation, they naturally blaze so clearly on the surface of your mind that even your native clairvoyance could read the information.
Well, that takes a load off my mind. Are you too big for me to understand?
We'll see. I'm just looking at that girl over there. What a pity. Three quarters of her right lung is gone.
Yeah? Well, you could put her right.
Well, I could stop the infection. But she would return to that back room full of smoke and dust. She'd still travel on a crowded subway to an overheated office. She'd still starve herself to buy clothes to keep in fashion. I don't have a cure for those things.
Well, that's the first time I've heard you admit you have a cure for anything. What are you, Mr. Trancorn?
A healer. That is my profession.
Why do you bother to do anything?
Even a healer must eat, you know. And field research is expensive. Of course, I could obviously earn sufficient of your tokens for subsistence by gambling. That would not be ethical.
You could teach.
What? Run afoul of your witch doctors? Besides, these techniques have taken me 500 years to learn.
Well, that's why I thought
that I was from the future. Well, I might be in terms of possibility. We are no older than you are as a race, in terms of universal evolution, but as individuals, we are longer lived. The biggest single advance you will make as a race will be when you increase the lifespan of the individual.
You could help us.
We could, but that must be achieved by your own efforts.
Are we so contemptible in your eyes?
Of course not. Would we study you if you were? Our architects, our musicians, even our fiction writers do field work in this territory and write scholarly theses when they return. Anthropology, in our sense of the term, embraces all the arts and sciences. We are scholars. Occasionally, we innovate, and you benefit.
Why do you want to tell me this?
Frankly, I like you. You have imagination enough to control your terrestrial chauvinism, your natural resentment of being studied. It may comfort you to know that in the physical sciences, your race is considered quite well advanced.
Well, thank you. And come to think of it, I do resent being a bug under your microscope. I hate it. I could kill you.
But you won't. Others would. Now you understand why our visits are unannounced. Will be until all men are as essentially civilized, that is to say, non-aggressive, as you are.
How do you come here?
I know what you're wondering. But now I don't have a spaceship garaged anywhere. You see, we don't travel. We arrive. I'm afraid the distinction is not clear to you, but it'll have to do. Now, I must go to work. I have only 8 hours. Will you be my guide?
What do you want to see?
The city at play in the pre-dawn hours.
I think my wife would suit you better in the role of a guide. She's playing pretty hard right now.
And this situation makes you unhappy?
Well, yes, of course it does. I guess I'm not overly emotional, but I do love Betty. I want her to be happy. With me. Oh, she frets and nags, and she's hard to please, but she's not really like that. She keeps herself busy with trivial things. It's as if she were afraid of important things.
And what are the important things?
Well, I don't know exactly. Helping people some way or other, I guess.
You have any idea where your wife might be?
Well, there are a couple of nightclubs she likes.
Could we go there a little later? No, don't worry. I promise there'll be no unpleasant consequences if we meet. But now, let's get going.
We made the early morning rounds at Manhattan. The bars, nightclubs, penny arcades. We played a pinball machine, and I watched the steel ball hit the prize number 25 times. We quit bowling after his second straight 300 game, and I didn't even bother to pick up a cue in the billiard parlor. Then we went to the Clover Club, where I saw Betty at a table in a low, low-cut evening gown. She was sitting with a big, curly-haired guy who looked like an ex-football player who was wearing shoulder pads under his jacket.
You see her?
Yes, there she is, in that practically non-existent dress. Would you consider me uncivilized if I poked that big dope in the eye?
Let's go over. And remember, you're not altogether without blame in this development. You make insufficient allowance for her. You're reasonably well-adjusted. She's not.
Hi, Betty.
Frankie. Frankie, where did you come from?
Who's your friend?
Excuse me, please. I have to make a phone call.
Frankie, please get me a cab so I can go home.
Go home? All right, dear.
I'll be waiting for you. Hurry as soon as you can. I mean, when you're finished with your work.
It's beautiful here, watching the lights on the river. How do you feel?
My head is clear, but I'm a little drunk from the neck down. It's like a dream.
I wish sometimes I could escape reality so easily by imparting to it the patina of a dream. You can all do that. I almost envy you.
Look, the dawn is coming up. The stars are fading.
Yes. It's time for me to say goodbye, Mr. Pake.
Can you at least tell me which star?
You haven't seen it or named it yet. Promise to take care of Mr. Trancor for me, won't you? Make sure that he gets safely home. Find his address in this pocket.
Goodbye, Mr. Trancor.
Yes. Goodbye.
That's the way it happened, Chief. The body collapsed in my arms there on the bridge. When it came to, the man was Chandra Trancor, a second-rate doctor who disappeared from Madras 10 months ago.
How do you expect anyone to believe that?
Those doctors and cops can examine the poor devil till they drive him crazy, but he can't tell them anything. He has less idea where he's been these past 10 months than they have.
How do you explain it?
I don't. And I'd like you to hurry through my resignation, Chief.
That's what you want.
I want to be free to take legal action for Trancor if those witch doctors have him arrested on some phony charge. I'll take personal responsibility for seeing him home to India.
You don't have to resign. I'll pick special leave if you insist on being crazy.
Well, that's not all, though, Chief. You see, I'm taking an intensive 2-year course for a new career.
Yes, you told me. I thought you were drunk. What's Betty going to think of a fool idea like that? If her nerves are on edge now, this is enough to drive anyone dappy.
No. She's all for it. She really is. After all, a neurosis is a disease, and she met Trancor.
Well, all right. Let me know how you're getting along. Letter from Pake, Miss Hance. From the Mabello Medical Mission, Upper Congo. It's been 3 years since we heard from Pake. This is probably the most backward tribe mentally and physically in all Africa.
Some trouble with the witch doctors at first, but they're beginning to trust me, with Betty's help. The women here love her, and she finds the tribal customs fascinating. Watch out for my name in the Anthropological Review.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Operation Stinky by Clifford D. Simak. What is man's best friend? The answer was so vital that every possible resource that could be found had to be poured into this one great project. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X-1 has brought you Field Study, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Peter Phillips and adapted for radio by Jack Wilson. Featured in our cast were Terry Keane, Les Damon, Santos Ortega, Alfred Shirley, and Kermit Murdoch. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Can you identify the NBC Bandstand Jingle Jangler? He or she is a famous personality, and you may win $1,000 if you can identify him. To enter the NBC Bandstand Jingle Jangler contest, send a postcard with your name and address and phone number to NBC Bandstand, Box 515, New York, 19, New York. Enter today. NBC takes you across the nation, around the world, with news on the hour and the hotline service all day, every day on most of these stations.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.